Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, September 3rd, 2011. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic today is Glass-Steagall or Chaos. Now, this speaks for itself, but it's also a special banner, a slogan from a campaign in Denmark, national elections there that are taking place September 15. So we have today people associated with that, a candidate and another associate, because this is important right now to take advantage of having a special report from Europe at a time when the entire world is at a dramatic moment of decision. Will it be Glass-Steagall and the pathway and gateway to regrouping for development for nation states and the human race, or will it be chaos? Now, I'm going to welcome our guests and then say a few things to kick off the discussion. But speaking to us from Copenhagen, we're glad to welcome back again Tom Gillisberg. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Marcia.
Good connection. And Tom is the candidate in the elections. He's going to be telling you all about it in a minute. But another friend from Denmark is currently in Manhattan in New York City, Michelle Rasmussen. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Marcia. Very happy to be with you.
Thank you. And she will say more about this, but she, Tom, as well, are part of the Friends of the Schiller Institute in Denmark. They'll explain more, but part of, for many years, fortunately for us all, they've been part of the international associates of Lyndon LaRouche, Helga Zepp LaRouche, and there's very particular things to be said about Denmark and Europe in a few minutes. The thing that I want to draw to people's attention is in the United States, our listeners know this is a holiday weekend, but in particular, it's Labor Day weekend. Labor Day is Monday, September 5, and There are some gruesome ironies right now because of the high unemployment here and internationally. In fact, on September 2nd, the official report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the United States that no jobs at all were created this week, zero jobs. In other words, even the computers, which falsify the manufacture of jobs, couldn't be induced to produce a job. Now, in addition, on Monday in Detroit, which is our former heavy manufacturing center with still millions of hundreds of thousands in the Great Lakes of skilled workers who are not having the opportunity to contribute to the world, that's where President Obama is going to go and speak. And on September 8th in Washington, when Congress comes back, he's going to speak about jobs. It's all a mockery. In fact, the whole labor force of the world is in an unprecedented kind of dislocation. The world's population, the one estimate is just in the last few years, you've lost 60 million jobs in high-skilled engineering and building and physical activity that you need. So what we most need is leadership now to get out of this mess. It's a policy disaster. It isn't because of Mother Nature, who's very active right now. In North America, we've just had an eastern earthquake. We just had an earthquake now in the Alaska Pacific Rim of some size. It wasn't in a heavy population zone. But there's distress among nations. We need a radical policy shift away from what we've had for more or less 40 years of neo-British Empire kinds of globalization, kinds of looting, all kinds of downshift in our energy grid when we should have been going nuclear like hell. So what that brings us to is I want to point out that if this in the United States, the day after Labor Day, the U.S. Congress comes back in session. Now, they've been part of the problem, not the solution. Some of them have been unspeakable. But there is underway in the United States, and you'll hear from Europe firsthand, a mass awakening, a kind of upsurge of potential. You've seen that in town hall meetings where there was more people than anyone expected. You've seen congressmen confronted when they went into their usual unreality rant. And into all of this, There is, among the interventions of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, has been a terrific a barrage of ammunition called variously the seven necessary points, the seven points of action that we have to be taking now. These were spun out by Lyndon LaRouche, and they'll be familiar to you. We won't go into them now right this second like a catechism, but point number one is we have to create the situation where Obama is out of office. Impeachment, we have to resign him to make it a verb. He has to be told so that we can make way for, to begin with, the reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Law we had in 1933 to penalize and cut out the speculative money system and create conditions for credit for what needs to be done. That's point number one of these 7 points. And I refer everyone to the Executive Intelligence Review, EIR Online, current issue. That would be dated September 2nd. And the cover feature is The Path to Survival, LaRouche's 7 Necessary Points for a Real Recovery. And that has this features the continuing activities of the slate of 6 candidates associated with the LaRouche Political Action Committee, the 6 congressional candidates around the country who are very active and very active this Labor Day weekend and with emergency town hall meetings. And that gives us the kind of task focus that people need to activate as never before right now at this turning point in the United States. But we're going to take this from the vantage point of friends around the world, in particular in Europe and in particular in Denmark. And I want to say that in advance that on the next LaRouche, the weekly show here, the LaRouche show, that'll be, that'll come on September 10th. It'll be a day before the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. We will have someone from campaigning around the United States, and also they'll be joined by Paul Gallagher, who has written a review of the unemployment of world labor. It's in the August 26 EIR Online, and Paul Gallagher gives parameters about the world's population, its workforce, and the dislocation. That it's titled The Really Fearful Crisis. Labor to rebuild the world is thrown on the global scrap heap. So that's for September 10th. And with that, we go right to Copenhagen. And Tom, if you would just go right into why you're running for office, the pace of this campaign. I understand it was announced was that August 26th, a week ago Friday, kind of snap elections?
Yep.
And tell us about Glass-Steagall or chaos. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I mean, this election comes at a time when we've had the present liberal conservative government for around 10 years. And basically over that time, we have Denmark has been in the same process that the United States has been. We're a little bit behind, but we have had an economy that has been driven by a massive housing bubble, and by having this housing bubble, it created the illusion that there was, so to speak, free wealth to grab, and people would then go out and get a lot of extra loans based on these housing values to spend. And this, so you had a consumer, a credit-based consumer boom that has been making the Danish economy soon. And now we suddenly stand in a situation where this whole thing is coming down. And the problem is the response of the government to that has not been to say, hey, what have we done wrong? How should we change our ways? What could we learn from history? Like, for instance, what could we learn from Franklin D. Roosevelt in this crisis that's that we are right now, this onslaught coming on, this total financial breakdown, which is not centered in Denmark as such,
right,
but in the whole euro region, where the euro right now is basically in danger of disappearing, but where Denmark, that has maintained its own currency, very much thanks to our campaigning, by the way, still is hooked up to the whole euro system, and therefore basically will be sucked down with it if it goes.
Right.
And the problem is, under these circumstances, the response of the government has been to say, well, then we need a banking package to make sure we help the banks. So they made one banking package, a second bailout package, a third bailout package. Now we just have the fourth so-called banking package. And then they say, and then we have to stimulate the private consumption to get the economy going again. So there's absolutely no idea of real economy. And that is therefore, at the same time, we have a situation where the population is getting tired, of course, of the sitting government and saying, now it's time for a change. So the opposition, social democracy, socialist People's Party, is standing right now with the what you can say with the strongest hand to actually gain the new government power, but the problem is, left on their own, they will not really have what it takes of insight to really have a new policy. And it's therefore exactly in that situation that we are then running as independent candidates, in order to bring the real issues on the table, the real solutions on the table, in, as you said, with the slogan Glass-Steagall or chaos, bank division, not hyperinflation. And where we have a very graphic poster where you can see a bank being split into two, with the real economy on one side and the financial toxic waste on the other side, and where we then also have illustration of what is to follow such a Glass-Steagall Act, big infrastructure projects that we need to build right now in Denmark, a huge bridge project called the Kattegat Bridge, a maglev representing what we have been the spokesman for here in Denmark, a national maglev net, also a couple of nuclear power plants. And that, again, first we need a Glass-Steagall to stop this insane bailout policy of the banks, which will simply bankrupt us, but that will also then give us a firm basis for beginning for having national credit to actually begin these kind of big infrastructure projects that has been totally non-existent over the last 10 years under the present government. So that, so to speak, is our role. And the interesting thing is, because we do not do this out of nothing. 4 years ago, when we had the last election, national elections, we were also running campaigns. I was also a candidate here in Copenhagen. At that time, with a slogan called After the Financial Crash, Maglev over Kattegat. And that, at the time, became a major discussion point in especially, of course, a lot of journalist layers, political layers, but also in general, what is this? How dare someone go out with this slogan and say we're going to have a financial crash when everything is so fine? The economy is booming. All the economists says that everything is great. But what is interesting is, in the campaign right now, with this new slogan, first of all, I mean, our poster is the only poster at all saying anything. Everybody else simply has a smiling face and a name and vote for this letter on their poster. No ideas, nothing. It's simply, to put up something. We have a poster actually saying something, and something which is also somewhat challenging, which demands you think, because Glass-Steagall is not a household word. Yet, it's becoming that through our campaign. But up until now, it has not been a household word here in Denmark. This is part of the education process. And as when we then and we get journalists calling in to also to either take an interview or we were also 2 days ago I was actually on the main morning television show here in Denmark where a lot of people while they prepare for the day watch television like in the United States. I was actually on there for some minutes to be able to explain what this means, Glass-Steagall or chaos, why I'm running, why people have to vote for me. And in this debate, as I had by mistake actually said, well, I ran in 2007 with a slogan after the financial crisis, Maglev over Kattegat. When I was finished speaking, the journalist broke in and says, but that's not really what you said. You said after the financial crash. And nobody believed you. Nobody thought it was possible. But you were right. So the fact that we have, because of our close collaboration with Lyndon LaRouche, been able to so precisely predict the financial crisis, why it had to come, how it could have been avoided, what we should do instead. This is out there. People know. People, they don't know how we knew, but they know we were right on this. And that gives a certain space where there's an increase in openness to say, but then what you say we have to do, this has to be considered. And this is extremely important also here in Denmark, because as we stand to probably have a new government coming in, it's not 100% certain, but it still looks that way. It means that there will be a new beginning. It means that there has to be totally new policies put into place. This is totally fresh players, most of them. In that situation, it is extremely important that we then are able to provide them and put in a concept of what is really going on, but also of what has to happen here.
Right, that's quite clear. Let me ask you this. You mentioned the crash, how you were vindicated, although people should have, I'm sure some did, but they should have listened closely in the last election. But you mentioned the housing bubble, the consumer bubble. You also had more onslaught of greenieism, I presume, over this time period. Do you have the wind farms and so forth?
Oh, yes. Denmark is still the biggest exporters of windmills on the planet.
I see.
So this, and this is, of course, the danger with the new government coming in, because this is the brainwashing.
Okay.
That yes, we have to create jobs. How do we create jobs? We have green growth, they call it, which is green growth. That's the kind of mold you get on some when you leave the food out for too many days. It turns green, and you shouldn't eat it. You'll die. But this is, of course, a very real danger, because this is being heavily pushed. But at the same time, because of our very active campaigning over the years, I mean, we decided some years ago that we cannot simply sit back and let the media control the debate. So we actually began issuing campaign newspapers, which we would then print in 50,000 copies, which we would then circulate. With a very much more in-depth idea of what is going on, what should we really do, and with a major focus on big projects, which can transform the economy, put it onto a higher level, like we right now in the U.S. is discussing in the extreme version with the Navafak program.
Mm-hmm.
But by us keeping beating on these big projects, big projects, big projects. This is part of the discussion, actually, in the opposition. They are actually have adopted the slogan saying, we cannot solve the crisis through cutbacks. We have to solve it through investments.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, the door is open, but we have to be there to make sure that there's this understanding of, well, what type of investments? Is it like Barack Obama would suggest that we change all the light bulbs? should it be real investment, like, for instance, building these bridge projects, building Maglev, something that is really a revolution in would create a revolution in the productivity of the economy.
Right. And, you know, did you, before I turn, I wanted to ask Michelle some, she might fill in some of this past history and this, the mood of people and what you've been doing and intervening with these campaign newsletters and so forth. But first, would you mention to people, we'll remind our listeners, I think, what's the population of Denmark? Somewhere under 6 million.
Yes. About 5.5 million.
And you're talking about connecting, if you visualize a map, the Jutland with Zealand, right?
Yes,
across.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And you, but you have, you are running it as independent and you have two other candidates. Could you just fill that in?
Yes. I mean, it's because of our, in that limited resources, we did not have the possibility of running as a party.
Okay.
Which means that you have to collect very many signatures and it's very expensive, very difficult process. So we said, even though we cannot run as a party, we have the option as running as candidates outside the parties.
Okay.
It's very difficult to get elected that way, as the system works, but it means that we have a platform to address the present crisis on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running here in Copenhagen. We then have two other candidates. The one is Janus Kramer Møller, who is running over in the second biggest city in Denmark, Aarhus, in Eastern Jutland district.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then we have Hans Schulz, who is running in Northern Jutland, in where the main city is Aalborg, also as a candidate outside the parties. And that is means that we are running in three of the 10 greater of the 10 election districts in Denmark.
Mm.
Which means then, therefore, around 30% of the population have a chance of voting for us.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is not, I mean, we are not running on the basis that now it's the important thing of this is how many votes we get as such, because as the system is set up, it's extremely difficult to get voted in on this basis.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking this opportunity to have an education process of both the political layers but also the population in general. Because as it stands right now, Denmark is not as hard hit by the crisis as, say, Greece or Ireland or many other countries, or Italy or Spain. We are a little bit, there's a greater fat layer here in the economy to live on. We right now have to really go full speed ahead with this to have the momentum as the crisis deepens day by day, week by week, that we can have the appropriate response. I mean, we are still to a large extent dependent on what happens in the United States. I mean, even if we do a brilliant job, it's very difficult to actually, that it would—it's not very likely that you would have European countries really seriously going for Glass-Steagall on their own. They're too weak. There's not enough national sovereignty. They're too much under the oligarchical control. But as soon as we get a move in the United States in that direction, what we are building up right now will immediately join in. Following a move by the United States, but it's unfortunately to a lot, not probably the case that if the United States does not go with the Glass-Steagall, then it will be almost impossible to get Europe to do it on its own.
Right. Well, Michelle, maybe we can go back and forth on this, but maybe you want to fill in some of the history of preparing the way, for which now, of course, it is at a crisis point that we're intervening to, for people to take action. But do you want to review that?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Tom mentioned the parliamentary election campaign in 2007. But in 2005, Tom headed up a slate of candidates from the Friends of the Schiller Institute who ran in the municipal elections. And the slogan that time was, "When the bubble bursts, a new Bretton Woods." And it had a picture of the candidate, and then besides was a bubble with derivatives, housing bubble, and inflation. And the funny thing is that that campaign is also very well remembered when we said when the bubble burst. That was in 2005. And the funny thing is that that poster won the worst poster of the year award from one of the tabloids. And then the poster that Tom mentioned from 2007, that was actually elected by another one of the newspapers as the best poster of the year because of it had content. Then also in 2009, we ran in the municipal elections with a slate from the Friends of the Schiller Institute, and the poster there was "Economic Collapse, Only a New Credit System Can Save Denmark," mm-hmm. with a picture of unemployment lines. And actually, in 2008, I believe, one of the only two national TV stations in Denmark, after Gordon Brown made some statement in favor of a new Bretton Woods system, and he means something different than what LaRouche and Tom represent, but the second TV channel actually called up Tom and said, "Oh, we remember your poster, New Bretton Woods. Come on and be interviewed about this." Mm-hmm. So he was actually interviewed for about 20 minutes on national TV about that. Then also, since 2007, the Schiller Institute has had 10 testimonies before different parliamentary committees, from the Transportation Committee twice about our proposal for the maglev project and the Kattegat Bridge that we just mentioned, in front of the Political Economic Committee twice, in front of the Foreign Policy, Agriculture, Energy, and the European Committee. And actually, in terms of the European Committee, we had our testimony there one day after the release of the United States Angelides Commission report, commissioned by the U.S. Congress to detail for the first time to get some truth out about what actually led up to the financial crash. So we were able to call for a Danish Angelides Commission Financial Inquiry Commission report there, and also speak about the latest of the collapse of the euro. Just two more things I can tell about. When we Tom mentioned the campaign newspaper, which we have issued 12 of in the last few years, they are issued either in 50 or 60,000 copies, and with a population of 5 million, that would be the equivalent of 3 million copies in the United States, mm-hmm. for a population of approximately 300,000, oh, excuse me, 300 million. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I can mention is that every year the parliament actually has an open house where we can go in and directly engage the brave parliamentarians who show up in the different party rooms. There are actually 9 different parties in the parliament, even though it's a small country. And so we engage them directly on the most important political issues and get to speak to ministers and parliamentarians. And a characteristic response was from one of the ministers. He said, "Oh, you were right about the financial crash." But then he said, "But you want to have maglev across the Kattegat. How ridiculous."
Right. Well, we could take this in a couple directions, but you've certainly sketched in the basis for which those who really want to seek truth can start to figure it out. But let me just ask you, either one of you, in your campaign, you have now the endorsement of a very important European figure, Helga Zepp-LaRouche, our leader in Germany and in Europe, but who's visiting the United States, and you interviewed her a few days ago, Michelle. And on this thing that Tom has mentioned too, the oligarchy factors, Helga, who endorsed you, Tom, and the other your associates, she said what gets her is that it's not one government has been speaking out, despite the intensity with which it's so apparently evident, even to our limited 5 senses, that the entire financial system's falling apart, the economic ramifications are hideous, millions of people are in the streets. So in a way, Michelle, Helga told you in this interview, it's one small nation, that is, in size or in population, though is like an individual. Every voice can count now. What do you find people's opinion in Denmark, well-informed or not well-informed, whether they're a minister, as you mentioned, or a person on the street, about how obvious it is that this is the end of the line, we're up against the wall, and something has to be done? What do you have to say about people's view on this?
Well, I would say it's not, Denmark right now is not yet experiencing what the United States is going mm-hmm. through. We have not seen in the same way mass firings of public work, public officials, and so on. Mm-hmm. It has been up until now to a more limited degree. So people know something is wrong. I mean, right now, basically no houses are being sold.
Uh-huh.
And that is a big concern for the politicians. They were speaking about, well, maybe we need a housing package. Maybe we need to give people a credit if they buy a house so we can get the market going, which, of course, is a total insane thing, because the problem is, the reason people don't buy houses is because they are scared shitless.
Uh-huh.
Of what is coming on. Are they going to lose their job? Are they going to lose their income? Will they be able to pay for the mortgage of the house at all, even though you have an historic low interest rate? And so you have this, on the one side, people are, they know something is out there. They're not being told about, but they know they have to be very worried about it. But then there is still quite a distance to go for people to comprehend, no, this is the world system coming down. This mm-hmm. is not just a little crisis. It's not a recession. It is not a couple of years where we will have a little tough time until it gets better. This is the global system coming down. This mm-hmm. is the civilization coming down. This people do not... people in general and the political layers do not really comprehend. It's like it's too big, it's too scary. So for that reason, they need us in a certain sense to state this. Somebody has to have the guts mm-hmm. to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also say, I mean, we have had these testimonies in Parliament, which is being watched, which is also, of course, when we have it, it goes up to all the parliamentarians. But it's also been a question of having things on the record, because in the official political line, like the prime minister, you know, suddenly a couple of months ago he says, "Ooh, oops, I thought the economy was great. Maybe it's not so great anyway." But nobody could know. Mm-hmm. And the point is, well, somebody could know. Somebody did know. We said so. We warned about it. We told what should be done. And they refused to listen. But it's on the record that they refused to listen. So it's and that is, again, it's extremely important in the time that come. That I mean, this we have been doing here. This we have been doing to a much larger extent in the United States and worldwide with the role of Lyndon LaRouche. There is right now, therefore, no excuse. If you are a moral human being, if you have just the slightest inch of morality, there is no excuse right now for not coming out and beginning to fight this fight. This goes for the political politicians in Europe. This goes for politicians in the United States, because there's absolutely no doubt that LaRouche and his associates have been 100% right, and that everybody else has been at least 90% wrong.
Right.
And I think this is an therefore an important part. And as Helga say, we have to be 100% active everywhere to the maximum of what we can, and then at some point, somewhere, truth will break out. There will be somebody that begins to become more courageous, and we can actually begin to break this thing open, and we can get out of this alive.
It's a question of the moral authority and a leadership question, because the role that Tom and our candidates play in Denmark is the same role as LaRouche and his the six candidates are playing now in the United States. That they have said this would happen, and they have come at every point, come out with solutions, and have challenged the those who have been in denial that something like this could happen. As Tom also referenced the statement by the Danish Prime Minister. And, you know, Tom is saying to the people, why would you listen and vote for people who had no idea that this would happen? Why not rally around the leadership and the understanding of real economy as opposed to the bubble economy of the other ones? We have said that this would happen, and we know what to do. And if we can use this election campaign to get this Glass-Steagall archaeus on the agenda, if nothing else, then that will also be a rallying point for people to say, okay, we can do something. We can follow and collaborate with the people who have an understanding of what is the difference between a speculative bubble economy and what is real economy. And I'll say one of the other issues that we're bringing into the campaign is what Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing so eloquently in the last programs on the LaRouche PAC TV show, which is the question that the real economy is based on development of the human creativity of every child that's born, of every citizen, no matter how old they are, to develop that capacity to create scientific and technological progress and go forward instead of going backward.
Right. Let me interject here just some program note that I should have said earlier. Some of you who are watching listening to the show live on LaRouche Pub, we did have to pre-tape. So we did pre-tape September 2nd. This is the September 3rd, 2011 weekly LaRouche show, but because of scheduling, and we're very glad that Tom Gillisberg also could be with us during his campaign, because the election is September 15, less than 2 weeks away. It was called only barely a week ago, the election. But this week is special, and otherwise we'll be at our usual time too, on live on September 10th. Let me ask the two of you, throw in here, what you've said about putting out the truth, and it's kind of, it goes forward and backward. People then suddenly realize they could have or did know it at the time and did nothing years ago, or this will stand up as the truth years from now. Maybe you could call that the Hans Christian Andersen principle. Aren't there some things about truth telling in some of those many stories? Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, and this is absolutely. I mean, the Hans Christian Andersen, the most striking one in that respect, of course, is The Emperor's New Suit of Clothes.
Yes.
Where everybody, especially everybody from the emperor down. Keeps pretending that they're seeing things that are not to be seen, his clothes being woven by thin air. since the imposterous had stated that if you could not see this beautiful clothes, you were either incompetent in your office or dumb, nobody dared speak up. And of course, this is exactly the psychological control mechanism that has been on the political layers, on the what you can call almost the intelligentsia, even though they're not so intelligent most of the time, but the more educated layers, that they are acting the most dumb in political terms, mm-hmm. in terms of going along with the whole climate fraud, this whole anthropogenic climate change, the green policies. All of this, they have been going in the most extreme direction of being really anti-science, anti-industry for this whole greenie fraud. And this has been not what you can say the most uneducated layers that has been falling for all of this crap. This has been the most educated layers.
Uh-huh.
With exactly this type of psychological control mechanism that you don't want to be caught saying the wrong things. If you are to fit in, you have to pretend it is this way, even though your common sense or your reason would tell you it's not. And this in Denmark, in a certain sense, I mean, we are deep in the hole like many other countries, but from time to time stands out as a kind of hope of salvation in this country.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly that you've had Hans Christian Andersen as an outstanding, actually, writer in terms of really picturing these principles that are extremely important to know, and of course all Danes know these fairy tales and have them as reference points.
Mm-hmm.
And also you had people like Hans Christian Ørsted, who was the mentor of Hans Christian Andersen, the discoverer of electromagnetism,
mm-hmm.
but who also was an extremely important person in changing, transforming Denmark, in creating, in spreading science, in creating the Polytechnical University here in Denmark, of getting a... simply putting out the foundation for Denmark as a modern nation, but also being very integrated in the same kind of work all over Europe. So you have somehow that kind of tradition is out there somehow, and something that we of course are working very actively to revive.
It must be said that in the Emperor's New Clothes, at the very end, it was a small boy who had the naive courage to just shout out, "But the emperor is not wearing any clothes." And that is the metaphor for the function that Tom Janus and Hans in Denmark and LaRouche and our slate of six candidates play in the United States. It is the small boy who says the obvious, who says the emperor is not wearing any clothes. The system has collapsed. The system is collapsing, and there is a better way. And this question of metaphor that LaRouche has always been stressing as the way to get the brains going of having a leap of understanding, the quality of metaphor is very prevalent in all of Hans Christian Andersen's stories. And you can just name a story or a phrase, and that is part of the Danish culture. And even, yeah, we didn't even mention it, our campaign poster is also a metaphor for the most famous campaign poster in recent Danish history from the 1930s. The leader of the Social Democrats ran in the terrible crisis of the 1930s with a slogan, Stauning or Chaos. His name was Stauning. Uh-huh. And so when we go out with this Glass-Steagall or Chaos, even though people don't immediately know what Glass-Steagall is, they think back to the 30s and the troubles there and the chaos and the terrible social consequences that followed in Europe. So our poster itself is a metaphor for something that then we, through the campaigning, tell people about.
Right. Well, I think when you've been on this program before and some years back, and I remember at one point you talked about the impact in reaching into people's tradition for optimism. And when the bridge, did the Öresund bridge to Sweden first open in year 2000, something like that? And anyway, reaching into people's whatever tradition to know what can be done. Do you want to say something about that? Despite the intense, in fact, there's a worldwide use of the London Neo-British Empire to make Denmark one of the platforms for greeniness, right?
Well, it's very, very paradoxical, actually.
Okay.
Because you have, on the one side, Denmark is the main exporter of windmills. We also have and are very engaged in a lot of these green things. The big push in order to try to create this global green fascist government was also with the Copenhagen Conference.
Yes.
In 2009, exactly for this reason. At the same time as this is the case, Denmark is also the leading, have some of the leading scientists in the world. Mm-hmm. In terms of disproving this whole green fraud, where we have a scientist like Henrik Svensmark, mm-hmm. Who has been proving through his scientific work that the change in temperature on the planet is not regulated by activity on Earth as such, but primarily regulated by the influx of cosmic rays. Mm-hmm. And that in reality, Earth's climate is not controlled by Earth, and is not even controlled by the sun as such, but is controlled by the interplay between the cosmic rays coming to Earth from outer space and the solar activity. So this scientific work is, which just 1 or 2 years ago was trying to be really pushed aside and said this nobody wants to speak about, is really becoming the foundation for a whole new platform of scientific research all over the world. So you have this situation that it's in a certain way both ways. In the same way you have. At the same time as you have this whole greeny thing in Denmark, You also have the situation that Denmark has been one of the places where you have had, over the last decades, some big infrastructure projects being built. And that has created a kind of fundamental optimism in the population that you right now are lacking, for instance, in Germany, our big neighbor. Because people were skeptical towards these big projects, then they were being built anyway, and once they were there, they saw that their own opinions and their own and what they thought before was totally wrong. And you got, in a certain sense, the education that this whole zero growth, anti-development ideology is a fraud. And when people have that one or twice, then they get a little more, it's there, it's something that can be reactivated. And this is the potential, I would say, if we have a shift of government right now.
Okay.
That right now there is still this, in a certain sense, a certain hunger, a certain passion for now it's time we do something big again. Now we've been sitting here doing nothing for some time. Life is really getting boring. Shouldn't we have another great project to be fascinated by? And it's there, and it potential. That's a potential that could be unleashed. And that's to a large extent is also our role to be this catalyst in unleashing that. Like in the United States, it's our role. It's the role of the LaRouche movement to really get the United States united again around a great idea, a great project for transforming the world, like what was going on with the space program. And this time, it's also have as revolutionary program, but not only outer space, but in transforming the whole North American continent with Nevada.
The Great Bridge projects in Denmark were actually agreed upon, even though they had been dreamt of for 100 years. They were agreed upon just after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the optimism that was created by having a united Europe again instead of Eastern Europe and Western Europe. Mm-hmm. So at that time, the idea of making the three great bridge projects, which was laid out, and the first one was agreed upon, then after that the second, and now the third, the bridge project between the island below where the island that Copenhagen is located on to Germany, that is to be built.
Uh-huh.
And what we have been proposing, and what also one of the leading social democrats running in the election, Nicolai Wammen, the current mayor of Aarhus, is promoting, is to build this Kattegat bridge with a high-speed maglev link. Well, we are proposing the maglev link.
Uh-huh.
He's proposing the bridge.
The bridge, uh-huh.
Yeah, but that would be then the fourth great project, and this would mean that you could travel from the largest Danish city, Copenhagen, to Aarhus, the second largest city on the mainland, in only 25 minutes.
Hmm.
And this would have a tremendous transforming leap economically, culturally, educationally, in terms of the two great universities. It would totally transform the nation, which is divided by water. And so people have an idea of the transformation that was created by the first great project, the Great Belt Bridge, and thereby also they have an idea when we speak about the Eurasian Land Bridge and the great projects for the United States, what that would mean.
Let me throw one thing in here too, because you referred to the North American Water and Power Alliance. That's the big continental scale in the United States. And of course, you're on the Scandinavian, Northern, the Baltic area there. But the prospect of what's happening, the devolution in Africa, millions of people without food, the current unfolding of the London perpetual war policy prevailing temporarily. We're going to bound to keep it, to get rid of it. But in Libya, that's unfolding right now. But in fact, Denmark has, you mentioned science, there's engineering with infrastructure, there's also agriculture, other special skills that would be so necessary in revving things up. For upgrading and transforming the situation in Africa. There's making use of the great Congo River surplus that could go northward into Lake Chad. There's working on the Mediterranean area. And one thing that strikes me about Denmark, over the decades, it was always known for very high technology agriculture in the famous Danish ham exports. Denmark, in case people don't know, with this relatively small population, but has been a net food exporter for decades, but this was taken advantage of by the world cartel food control companies, as opposed to being a treasure of the world. Sometimes it's used that way. But do you want to say anything about this?
Well, it's again, it's a very paradoxical situation, because then there is in Denmark a certain urge that we should play an important role in the world. We should do something out there. We cannot just sit and do nothing.
Okay.
This, unfortunately, can go in different ways, because, as you might know, Denmark is one of the few countries which actually joined in this expedition in both first in both in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and also in Libya. Danish F-16 fighter planes has actually been extremely active in bombing in Libya with the backing of the full Danish parliament, and with a large also backing of the population. Because people say, well, we should be out in the world and we should do good. The problem is, if you're not able to really think through, well, what does it mean to do good? Do you do good by going around, just bombing other places, or do you do good by having real physical economic development, which lays the foundation to provide for food and for water and for development for the populations? And so Denmark can in a certain sense do either one. The biggest problem in Danish policy has been that Denmark historically, especially since World War II, has both been to a large extent trying to be a loyal partner of the United States and be a loyal partner of Great Britain. And whenever United States and Great Britain have the same policy, then Denmark tends to join that policy. If Britain and the United States would not have the same policy, then Denmark would choose the United States and go with the United States in the fight against the British Empire. That I'm sure of. But when the Britain and the United States stands together, then unfortunately Denmark is going that way, and the same goes for most of Europe, really.
Go ahead.
I would just like to add one thing before we run out of time, which is our homepage addresses.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, we have a campaign homepage from the Friends of the Schiller Institute, which is SI for Schiller Institute, V like Victor, E like Eric, point DK. And then our regular Schiller Institute homepage is Schiller Institute, but without the E at the end, point DK. And I also like to mention that the we are running a kind of twin campaign now because the Berlin mayoral campaign is occurring at the same moment. I think the election is either on the 18th or the 19th. Do you know, Tom?
You're right. I just don't know which one.
Yeah, yeah. Either of those. Just a couple of days after the Danish. And their homepage is Buso. That's B-U-E, like Eric, S-O dot D-E. And I would also strongly encourage your listeners to listen to the wonderful interview with Helga Zepp-LaRouche. It's a 42-minute interview, which is available on this SIV.DK page, and hopefully also soon on LaRouche Pack, but it's not there yet.
Right, it will be, and in fact, I think that your early morning call on September 2nd had a small segment from it. When the while you were sleeping on September 2nd, covered events in the world in the United States from the vantage point of Europe. So that's also given there. And you're right, we have run out of time, but we have ended with concretely that people should act, especially in the United States when Congress is back. We're giving the orders, and Tom Gillisberg couldn't have made it clearer, Tom, when you were saying Denmark will choose the pathway of the United States if we go ahead and split with this decades of subservience to the British Empire and create a new pathway for mankind. So I want to thank you both and wish you the very best in all this campaigning. That's Tom Gillisberg, who's on the election takes place in Denmark September 15th, and that's Michelle Rasmussen. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.
Okay, this is the end of the September 3rd LaRouche Show. Stay tuned September 10th. This is Marcia Mary Baker.